Currently, TSIA is conducting a research journey related to how account executives interact with AI capabilities on a daily basis. Competitive analysis is one activity where AI has the potential to be a game changer. But what exactly is the potential? What does the future of competitive analysis look like? I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I'm going to be joined by Jason Smith, the founder of Clue, a company that provides an AI platform for in-depth competitive analysis. We will be exploring this AI use case and the tactics to accelerate adoption of this capability across sales teams. So let's get the insight engine humming. Welcome, Jason. It's nice to see you. First time we've had a chance to meet. Welcome to Tectonic. And let's start with a basic here. When was Clue founded?
So we incorporated in 2015. We first started charging in 2017. My co-founder and I both had done some things before. So we raised a little money on the back of a PowerPoint and then had to build it. And so that took us to 2017. So I think of it founding in 2015, but really getting off the ground in 2017.
So I'm just, now that you put that start date on the table, I'm curious, when you started in 2015, in terms of AI capabilities and the technology platform you were on, was that already the plan, or did things quickly change as AI capabilities emerged?
So this is my fifth startup, and I'm like known for just being completely zealot based around what some of the new tech is going to do, like in 99, thinking that e-commerce was going to be 100% of how we bought things within 5 years, and it's still 13% 25 years later. But when we started the company, you know, it was much more referred to as machine learning. And did believe that ML would really help us crack the back of the platform, which is there's a ton of competitive insights scattered around the public web and inside your own company, and that ML would be the ticket for us to synthesize and narrow that down to the relevant bits. But wow, it's a lot different when LLMs came along and Gen AI came along. Yeah. It literally, we use the analogy of being, it felt like we're running in quicksand and we're up to our necks. And then all of a sudden there's this like LLM floating by us in like white Nikes, just cranking at a different pace. So that's the difference.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we have this working thesis that the day in the life of a sales executive, an account executive, is going to rapidly change as they have really more and more AI tools at their disposal, right, to do their job. And, you know, conducting competitive analysis to me is one of those activities, right, that they got to go do their homework, figure out what's going on, et cetera. And so I want to start out with some basics here. So you guys have this thing you call the Compete platform to help companies out. Tell us what that is, you know, and how that helps folks.
Yeah. I mean, put simply, we know that sellers out there get asked the same question over and over again. How do you compare? How are you different than? And prospects are more educated than ever. And ultimately, we created the Compete platform to help sellers answer that question effectively, to maybe even sniff some of the competitors that are in deals by picking up language and words that they might use that might indicate that the competitor is already heated.
Like in the RFP, they send out an RFP and they go, hey, in that RFP, that phrase right there, most likely you're competing against company ABC.
Yeah, they might say tiles instead of boards. They might refer to a specific feature. And so you can tell that there's a bit of seeding there. And if you don't, then you're trying to smoke that out and understand it. But ultimately, you're getting to the point where you're trying to understand who you're up against. And once you understand who you're up against, instead of shadow boxing, now you can go about elegantly depositioning. And so what Clue tries to do is say, look, there's a whole bunch of competitive information out there. I'll back it up. Think about your own company and all the stuff that's going on in your own company. You know, you might be winning awards, you're winning clients, you're losing clients, you're adding new features, you're changing pricing strategies, et cetera. Your competitors are doing the exact same thing. And so it's hard enough to keep up with your own company. We thought you need a lens into what your competitors are doing in the same way that you're trying to keep up with your own company. And so could we put that together in an algorithmic machine learning way and then put that in front of not sellers directly initially, but product marketers who are the ones that are supposed to understand how to differentiate properly and put the spin on the fact? It's one thing to discover that your competitor did some new AI thing. Yep. It's another thing to know what to say. when that's brought up by a prospect. And so I think this duality of, you know, figuring out what sellers should say is it starts generally with a product marketer or somebody inside the company that takes that, creates the angle. Listen, avoid this, lean into that. This is how you're going to want to talk about it in general. Ask them for to the prospect to get a demo, because we know it doesn't demo as well as their marketing release might say it would be. You know, you can push on certain areas there. And then sellers take that and start to riff it and get more information, and then they'll start to do some interesting stuff. So we'll listen to what sellers have said and how they've kind of embellished what the core spin that the product marketer's done, and then feed that all back in and just try and create a better positioning doc for sellers to win.
So I'm going to click into that in terms of your sort of target audience, right, with a platform like this. So what I heard there is product marketing is ideal, right? Because we can help them and they should be the ones that are really coming up with the best positioning possible based on what our competitors are doing, how to deal with that. But then is it in the wild or on a sort of day-to-day basis, then the platform is leveraged by salespeople based on the work that marketing is, the wrapper they put around on the platform, just so I sort of understand that flow?
Yeah, we think of it as curators and consumers. And okay. So the curator might take a lot of the raw intel that we'll find on their behalf, and that's the product marketer, and convert it into kind of a digestible, speakable insight that might appear on what we traditionally refer to as battle cards, right? So strengths, weaknesses, landmines you might want to lay, things to avoid, questions you're going to ask, overcoming objections. Those are the things that will take the raw intel and frame it into those cards that then would go in front of sellers. Yep. And the sellers can, you know, access that, you know, directly through Slack or in Salesforce. It might be entering the competitor name in the opportunity and then seeing the latest information about that particular competitor, or asking for the battle card in Slack and getting some of the strengths and weaknesses directly in Slack, or of course in Clue. But the idea is curators curate the raw intel into an insight. And the consumers, the sellers, will consume that insight and use it to win deal.
So I'm going to test the thesis here, and I could be completely wrong or I could be right. So we're going to see here. Here's my thesis on what is, you know, different is you start to use these types of tools for competitive analysis. One is the fact that the sheer data streams that you are leveraging to drive the insights changes here. So let me just click on that one. You know, what type of data streams are you using in this platform to inform the competitive analysis?
Yeah. So the data repository is huge. Like we'll probably look at 3 million data points a day and then bring that in. And so then you have to synthesize that down because, you know, the product marketer doesn't want to look at 3 million. They want to look at, you know, 100.
Yeah.
Well, and this is actually an interesting kind of point around kind of Gen 1 ML and now what Gen AI can do. So, you know, previously it was about getting that 3 million and distilling it down to maybe the 100 and giving kind of searching, sorting filters to be able to take it and say, that's the good stuff. I'll take that, then I'll massage it and I'll build a card or augment a strength or a weakness that exists on an existing card. And with Gen AI, you kind of like, you skip a lot of that process and you kind of just say, I need to update the strengths and weaknesses. And I actually trust the system to update it. So update it and just say, this is AI generated pending verification. And then maybe a human would go in and verify it. So it speeds the process. But getting back to your question on sources, it starts with the competitor website. And there's a lot of information on the competitor website, including the help docs and some of the support, you know, information that might exist that we can get to. So we put beacons and trackers on all of the competitor web pages that matter. And we monitor down to the pixel to see if there's a change. Did they change the price? Did they add something to different tiers? Did they add a case study, remove a client? And so we're tracking all of that. And then there's broad stuff like news and blogs, job posts.
Financial results, I think all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Social, you know, social is really interesting. We kept getting asked in the early days, like, hey, I want everything on Twitter. I'm like, do you? Because a lot of the stuff on Twitter, you know, we literally went down the initial fire hose. And then, you know, when Elon bought it, it started to become a lot more expensive to do that. But what we realized is, yes, it's noisy. And you generally are linking back to a prime source. So it's like a bit of context on something. And then you'll get a bit.ly link or something back to a prime source. And so we're like, well, we're already getting the prime source. So let's focus on that. So Twitter's really kind of a pointer to what might be more relevant or less relevant. So we'll bake that into our AI to understand what to present.
So first part of the thesis being the fact that in these new models, you can just process a volume of information, you know, in a reasonable way you could never do before. So whatever, I don't care how big your competitive analysis team was, how many people you had checking stuff, how many news feeds you had coming in, their ability to get through that volume of information is just not going to happen compared to what you can leverage the technology to do. So that's big game changer there. The second part of my thesis here is just really the refresh rate. So you mentioned battle cards, and you think about one of the historical problems with battle cards is, you know, product marketing team works really hard and we got our battle cards and they're coming out in PowerPoint or whatever out to our sales team. And then we're 2 months into the quarter or whatever, and our battle cards are out of date and, oh shit, they got this new capability. And, you know, I didn't know about that. I got blindsided in this deal. So I have to believe that, like you said, people are basically querying this thing. Like, I got a deal this week I'm working on. I want the latest and greatest on the battle card, not what we thought was going on 2 months ago. So talk a little bit about what you see there in terms of that compression.
You nailed it. You nailed it. The time compression of the change is everything. And it's literally why I started the company, because my whole founding story was I was running a 500-person SaaS company, and I was literally on sales calls where sellers were talking to a prospect, an educated prospect, talking about the difference between our platform and a competitor's platform and saying, you know, we did this, they don't do that, and that's why we're better. And the prospect was literally correcting them, going, well, I got a demo from them and they actually do that really well. And so there's this awkward moment,
right?
Literally, I'm sitting there as the president of the company listening to this going, this is uncomfortable. Yeah. And so, you know, so what I did was force, you know, our product team to actually build a wiki and try and keep it up to date. It was awesome when they first launched it. And like everything, it's shiny and great with all up to date content. That's not the hard part. It's keeping it up to date.
Yeah.
And so as soon as it falls out of date, sellers won't use it. And then the product team that was product marketing team is like, well, why would I update it? Because they're not using it. It becomes this vicious cycle. And so this is where Gen AI really plays a role. And we're in this transition right now between this curator, product marketer being kind of the pilot that needs to be at the pivot point of all content creation. And it's changing where we can automatically start to create a pretty good version of it that they can then, you know, finesse instead of create from scratch. And so it's reducing their workload significantly. They still need to put the spin on it, but it is reducing their workload significantly. So that is just a massive time compression where imagine you've got 100 products in your enterprise business competing with, you know, hundreds of other competitors, and they're all changing something every day.
Yeah.
Like every day there's something new. Like, do they have fingerprints on your competitors or not? Do they, are your clients or your prospects or not? And so these are all just, you look for different ways to kind of compress all of the time to curate something and get it updated. And ultimately the easiest way to think of it is that artifact of a battle card where it is a composite of strengths, weaknesses, why you win, why you lose, objections, overcoming it, typical pricing that you might be getting, what to say when asked this question, landmines to avoid. All of those things are basically insights built on a corpus of data that needed a level of curation. And so if you can automate more of that updating, then suddenly you've got, you know, 50 competitors that are automatically getting updates, and you don't have to wait for the human to view all of the updating. You can say, this is the AI generated version. Do you want to fall back to the verified human version, or do you want to look at this one? And meanwhile, then the human will at some point get to the verified version of it. So basically it's a speed assist that we can help, you know, time compress it. Because there's nothing worse than like getting on a call and then realizing that your competitor just launched something huge and your prospect got demoed that. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that. And then what happens? Then the cycle is you go to Slack and you're like, hey, I just heard this. Like, I'm pitching Robotron, and does anybody know about this new thing that the competitor launched? And then you get salespeople and product marketers answering that, and it creates this little flurry in Slack. Clue will insert itself into that conversation and help provide, you know, a talk track or an insight, or kickstart one of the fetching, hey, we found this thing. We've AI generated a version of it, and now human curator, do you want to just update it? Just, that's all just time compressing. And so maybe one person will get surprised in that deal in that day, but by the next day or within a very short period of time, everything's updated, and then people can run from there. And I want to be clear, we're in that transition right now. That is not dialed in for what we've built, but it is the transition and the promise of what GenAI can do. Yeah. And we're seeing flavors of it in the form of strengths and weaknesses coming from a corpus of reviews and win-loss interviews we did. That's actually, Thomas, one more thing. It's like when you talk about sources of insight, we acquired a company that does win-loss research. So, you know, literally talking to the buyer at the end of a deal, why'd you go with them, not us? When you have a third party do it, you get really, really good deep insights. It's the highest signal stuff that I've seen. We bought the company because they were doing it for us and like 150 other tech companies. And I was like, this is so rich, where you get the cold, hard truth of you have a bro culture in your sales team and you didn't even know it. Or the way that you're talking about it, the prospect doesn't believe that your AI features are as good as the competitors, even though you know yours are better. So there's something broken in your go-to-market motion that you need to fix in terms of communication. So that's one of the big insight generators that we have now, is literally triggering off the back of a closed deal that we would do for our clients. And it would either send a baseline survey to everyone or all the way to a 30-minute scheduled interview done by a 20-year qualitative researcher that all gets fed back into the compete and win-loss platform that just updates the battle cards, like, and updates the content. So it find the intel, curate it, create the insight, and get it in front of people wherever they are.
So a third part of the thesis here. So one is a volume of data, and I can process this in a way we never could do before. My refresh rate is so much better. And then the third part of this, and this could be futures, but I know from all the other AI use cases that we look at, the one of the most interesting things to me with these AI models is, especially machine learning models, is that they basically find out things that from the human perspective, we never did, right? So I'll give you an example. If you're using AI to look at renewal risks, you may say, hey, as a salesperson or, you know, team, we typically look at these seven factors. You put that into a machine learning model, and over time it says, oh, hey, by the way, there's this eighth or ninth factor over here that's really hurting your renewals that you didn't even understand the correlation, right? So the models get smarter than we do in terms of helping you see around corners, and you're bringing that in a little bit with this, you know, win-loss, like, hey, you didn't even know you had an issue here. So what do you think the potential is for the AI engines, you know, to start helping you see around corners and say, you didn't even realize this is a problem?
Yeah, almost like the predictive insight side. You get enough data, you can start to predict that future. I think that's it's a compelling promise. I think right now we're still in the stage of guidance more than we are like come up with magic out of the blue. So it's a little more directive, but what we can do is start to kind of almost seed the prompts like Perplexity does, where it's just like, hey, would you be interested in this? And then it can chase it down versus, you know, present it to you in this aha moment. It's more like, and what we found is there's a very high threshold for getting that aha delivered to you where you haven't asked for it, like, right. Like, there's nothing more annoying than some bot coming at you going, did you want to know this? Did you want to know this? And you're like, no, I didn't. Imagine a live call. And there's this promise of a live call where it's just like, we're going to tell you what to say in every live call. And you just can't parallel process that well unless it's absolutely the perfect thing to say, which it really never is. So I think we're in this world right now where we're still in this like guided prompt world of what should I say when I'm asked about X? How do I frame it? Is there a proof point I could use? Who do I talk to about? And like guiding that a little bit. But I think we're going to live in a world where predictive starts to play out when we have enough data. One of the things that we look at is just the measurement value, the ROI piece. So how do you know if this stuff's working? And the beautiful thing in sales is like people win or lose deals. There's a scorecard.
Yeah, for sure.
And so
a hard metric.
It is a hard metric, the world that we're in. And that hard metric, though, you could see what they used to help them win or lose those deals. And so we're seeing how much they're leveraging some of the talk tracks and some of the competitive insights that we might give them. And we can see the delta between those that are using the competitive insights and deals and those that aren't. So kind of cohort to cohort comparison, more than the same user using it. And, you know, it's a significant difference. Like generally it's, and usually we're trying to point to win rate. There's a lot more that goes into win rate than just the data. But when you say this group doesn't use any of the compete data and this group does, And we both started at the same time and we're watching it over time. So all the other external factors kind of play. It's a pretty good indicator that the stuff will make a difference. And that's where like the predictive stuff starts to get really interesting, because you're like, hey, you've been using this. Here's another thing you might want to consider for your next deal that looks similar to the deal that you did before. Mm-hmm. And now you go peer based and you're like, there's five other people on your team that are in deals just like yours that have used this kind of defense mechanism to kind of overcome that objection or avoid the landmine. And you might be able to use that too. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that guidance as a subtle thing. I don't know if it'll be live on the calls as much as it'll be like, this might be the next thing that you need to do. And that might come from a corpus of asking the buyer themselves, what did you think of that call? What was missing? What was not? So maybe win-loss interviews aren't waiting until the deal's done. Maybe they're done during, you know, the conversation with the buyer. And all that can feed back to you, like, here's the thing you're going to want to pick up for your next call.
So you're starting to chip on a thread that I definitely wanted to talk to you about, which is the challenge of adoption. So you were just talking about, you know, we have sales individuals or teams that are leveraging this type of tool and the competitive insights, teams that are not. So getting sales people to lean into interacting with the tool, asking the question and saying, hey, this is super important for me as I'm pitching. What's your observation there? And how do you see your clients really stick the landing to get their sales teams to embrace the technology?
Well, Thomas, are you insinuating that, you know, sellers don't want to adopt new stuff? Come on, that's crazy.
I am just speaking the facts of what I see in the real world. I'm not insinuating, I'm stating facts.
It is so true. It is factual. Yeah. You know, look, adoption of anything new is a challenge. People need to understand why it's going to make a difference. And so just another tool, like we've all been trained too much on the, I need you to fill in this field in Salesforce and you don't know why, but somebody else needs it. So you have to do it. That doesn't work, you know, now I think. So what we try and do is just show them the value, like, you know, 5-10 other sellers just like you use this and it worked. And we think this might be an interesting one for you to use. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a bit of a directional where we're headed with this AI. We're moving away from like an understanding of your competitor and a competitor battle card to a deal strategy card that happens to be related to the competitor. So, hey, we've listened to these gong calls. We're pretty sure this competitor, we sniffed that this competitor is in the deal. Your track record against this competitor is 54%. So it's okay, probably could be better. So we're providing a little bit of like, you could improve here. Mm-hmm. And then we just lost a deal to these guys recently. And you pull out a name from the CRM. And then we know that they've changed their talk tracks on how they speak about their AI capabilities. Yeah. Here's what you'd want to say for this particular deal, the Robotron deal, and you'd click and you would not get just the competitor battle card. You get the, here are the talking points for the Robotron deal when you're up against Adobe and pitching. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a personalized, only capable of, with AI kind of future world, right? Because that means you're doing personalized battle cards for each rep has 30 deals in their pipeline. You got 1,000 reps, do the permutation math there. And you just, there's no way a human can do that. But you can reimagine the content on a deal strategy level if it's generating related to the specifics of a deal, specifics to that seller, and just pulling on that corpus to kind of reshape it for the deal. So that's where we want to take it to help for adoption. We don't think sellers wake up every day and say, I want to know more about the competition. They wake up every day and go, I need to close 30 deals.
Yeah, they want to win.
It's exactly it. And we're literally talking about it less as a compete platform and more as a win platform.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense because you're right. I mean, that's what a salesperson cares about. And I'll just put a couple observations here around adoption, because our job is we're looking at AI adoption across lots of different use cases. But there are some common patterns here. So when an AI capability becomes available, and I don't care if you're talking about a tool like this for a salesperson or a tool to help a support person, or it doesn't matter, right? What we see pretty consistently is that tool gets out there, and you're right, and I don't care who the audience is, hey, does this really help my life, yes or no? I mean, that's job number one in terms of are they going to adopt it or not. It's got to really be meaningful. The thing about these AI tools is they're meaningful. it's not like a CRM system where it's like, hey, we want you to put this stuff in here and track your deals. And you're like, okay, is this really helping me close deals or not? I don't know. Probably not, right? But these AI use cases are meaningful. Even when that's true, we still see this bifurcation in adoption. And that is, you see, and I'm very curious what you're observing with the sales community. You see the folks that go, wow, and they like, you know, whether it's new technology, new tools, they lean in, they start using it aggressively right out of the gate, and they're like, this is awesome, right? And they are just all over it, and they're, you don't have to coax them, you don't have to, and they're getting the value. That's the cool thing about these tools. They're getting the value like that. Then you have this community that they're like, you know, I still think I know better. You know, it's like, I know how to pitch this. I have a lot of success. I really don't need this. And they really, regardless of the impact, they're just not interested. And so my prediction here, and for any community, and the sales community especially, it is going to be ultimately, it's sort of like a carrot and then a stick type of model. And what I mean by that is, you put these tools out there, the carrot is, hey, try them. Like you say, it's going to help you with win rates. Here's the data. Look at all this. You'll have that compelling data and people will jump in. And then eventually for the laggard, you know, companies are going to have to say, look, here's the stick. Salespeople like you that are using this tool are closing at 30% higher, whatever it is. This is non-negotiable. I'm sorry. You got to be checking with Clue. You got to be getting the insights because it's going to improve your hit rate. So I'm just curious, because you're in the guts of it. What do you think? How's this thing going to unfold?
You dialed it. Like, that's exactly it. It's only proof in the pudding. And, you know, look, I'll back it all the way up and say, look, you always try and train everybody with it. Like, you're trying to have this equality sense of, this is available for you. It's beneficial for you. You should do it. I've got this gym. It's got all the weights in it. You should come to the gym. But there are certain people that aren't going to come to the gym. We don't bother chasing them in that sense. We will focus on the people that actually initially are drawn into the gym and we'll build muscle for them. And then they're going to go out and they're going to see the other, and those other people are going to see the muscles on them and go, how'd you do that?
Right.
And then if it's like, well, it takes 6 months, it's a lot of work, it's 1,000 hours, it's like, oh. Right. But if it's like, it's simple, you actually just have to ask this Clue thing and it'll tell you what you maybe could use around the competitor. Then they're like, oh, maybe I should try that. Right. Imagine I could give you a button you could press to get muscles. Like, it might happen. And so our belief is, it's back to that theory. Like, we've got a client that at one point was going to cancel on us. And they, because only 10% of their sellers were actually using Clue on a regular basis. And so in 23, there was this, you know, this big cycle of CFOs looking at engagement and usage numbers and going, whoa, 90% aren't using it, kill it.
Yep.
And we did the math for them and just said, let's look at what that cohort of 10% are doing relative to the other 90%. And they were crushing the other 90% from a win rate standpoint, slightly faster time to close. And their deals were larger because they were discounting less. They didn't get to the 11th hour and say, okay, we'll get a better price, because they're mitigating the competitor through the deal. So you had three things stack up on a cohort compared to cohort basis. And very quickly, it went from, we're not canceling this, get those other 90% using it. And now you had the top-down help in addition to the, look, here, press this button and get instant muscles. And so, you know, it's not going to go to 100% usage, but it certainly created a difference from just let the thing just see if it works to you need to use this because it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, you're making my point here, that 90-10 breakdown right there. And that's not every Salesforce. But, and by the way, I have so much respect for sales teams. They got the super hard job, right? So I'm not trying to speak disparaging of the sales workforce because they're working super hard. But they have a tendency, I mean, if you give them something, you say, well, you use this if it helps, and it's sort of completely optional, you historically get these low adoption rates. You just do. And so what you just articulated there, right? Hey, we had this really wicked cool tool. Clearly for the cohort using it, they were getting big impact, but it was still a 90% of them weren't. And so I think that ultimately with tools like this for the sales force, it ends up being carrot then stick type model, because then, like you said, you get a top down going, whoa, 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 folks. we don't need 10% of you using it. We need pretty much all of you using it because the results are there. And so I think it just is what it is. I mean, I think you have to recognize the nature of that audience and say, that's probably the journey we're on with them. Because again, the ROI of tools like this are not little. They're massive. And so literally, you can't afford to leave the value on the table.
Oh, Thomas, you just nailed it. Like, I've gotten up on stage and talked about this thing called the competitive revenue gap because I'm like, listen, because I look, I manage sales teams. I focus on sales. I'm a multi-time founder. All I think about is how to sell better, frankly, on a lot of this from across the board. So I got up on stage talking about these competitive revenue gaps because I'm like, it's not like nobody wants to know how to answer the question, how do you compare? Everybody wants to know how to answer that question in a better way. So this isn't like forcing them to do something that, no, it's just a pattern change. It's just, they just need a better way to answer it. And they just need to know where they find it and access it and just part of a pattern change. And like, we're humans. And when we're humans under stress with sales quotas, you do what you know works. And so you just keep at that. And so all we're looking for is a slight nudge. Listen, the fastest path to hitting your target next quarter is not doing any change on their behalf. Don't get them to adopt a new tool. Don't get them to do anything. Just feed them what they're asking. Get them an answer to their questions in whatever tool they're using, in Slack, in Salesforce, wherever they are. Nope. Give them that answer on how to respond to the competitive threats, to sniff a competitive threat. And they're just going to tip more of those winnable deals. There's a bunch of deals that you're never going to win. Just some quick math. If you got a $100 million pipeline, you're going to win 20% of the deals, 30% of the deal, or 50% of the deals. No decision, right? Like, just don't know what happened to them. But 30% were competitive. And those are the ones that have the highest likelihood to close. They're going with someone. It just isn't going to be you. And you just got to figure out if you can tip some of those. You're not going to tip all of them. Their brother works at the other competitor. You're never going to win that. But there's a bunch that's just classic execution, how you respond to that question, the trust that you're imbuing through the deal cycle. And if you could tip a handful of those, if each seller tipped one of those deals in that quarter, you crush your quarter. And they're not doing anything new, not adopting anything else. And so it's stunning to me that we haven't embraced the idea of using competitive intelligence to tip the winnable deal, like win the deals you should have won.
Yeah. So let me click into that, kind of marry it with this theme of successful, effective adoption. So when you think about the companies you've worked with that really do a good job with this, right? So you said, let's use competitive analysis to tip the scale on these deals, to, you know, improve our win rates, et cetera. Just kind of describe the attributes of when, you know, you start a relationship with a company, what do they do in terms of working with you that seems to make them more effective and adopt faster, et cetera?
Well, first off, like most of the companies we're dealing with, this isn't a budgeted item. They've got, you know, to your point in the beginning, they got a 6-month-old PDF of a battle card that's on a Google Drive somewhere and nobody knows where to find it and the rest of it. So, you know, we go in and have to prove some value first. And usually that's to the product marketer. Sometimes we'll go in with the CRO first and talk about this competitive revenue gap and like literally do an analysis of how many competitive deals they've lost. And like you can bring up the Paramount Pictures deal that they should have won last quarter that they didn't. And those are moments where the CRO resonates, but they're, you know, quickly going to say, I'm not going to do the work to create the insight. So hello, product marketer, to do the work. And what happens is from an adoption standpoint, the first is cleaning out the garage. Mm-hmm. Like you go into their garage of 6-month-old steel PDFs and there's bikes on the ground, baseball bats, there's gloves everywhere, there's dirt. It's messy. And so you kind of got to clean up the old content and you've got to like give them a framework for organizing where the baseball bat should be hung up, where the spikes should be hung up, get things off the floor so that, you know, it's now a clean garage. That's the first thing we do.
And do you
competitive audit?
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Just right there, right? Just to help the audience and sort of practical tactics here. So just that piece right there, do you find that you're typically working with again, product marketing on that? Is it, you know, sales ops? I mean, who's your audience when you're saying, hey, we've got to get the closet in order here?
Content audit product marketers, competitive loss audit, the competitive revenue audit is with sales. It's either rev ops or, you know, the CRO kind of indicates it and then we'll put us onto sales ops.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, the tactics are real. And the competitive revenue gap analysis is something we just kind of started doing relatively recently, but it's like, it's a free thing. Like, we'll take a look at your CRM and just how many deals are you losing that maybe you should have won? Mm-hmm. And that's where the win-loss interviews can come in and get a little bit of, well, you know, it's really, and most deals, frankly, it's like, it's 51-49. You're not losing by a lot. It's not like a slam dunk that they went with your competitor. It's a bit of an edge.
Close.
It's so close on all of these things. And that closeness across 100 reps, a couple deals, makes the difference on your quarter. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's start with the competitive losses and go, what could your quarter have looked like if you tipped the winnable versions of those? Yep. And how do we find that out? We might do some interviews. And then bake that in to go, here's your current reality. Your competitive revenue gap is $34 million. Let's go about now systematically reducing the competitive revenue gap. And that's where it goes into the content. What is it that reps are going to care about? What are the specific product comparisons that we need to do? Competitive pieces. And rebuild dynamic battle cards inside of Clue. And then feed that through. Again, HighSpot, Slack, Salesforce, wherever they are, and Clue. So that they can get that information quickly. And then what I'm really, you know, hopeful for the next gen here is flipping it around so that every day a rep can wake up and run their deals through a Clue filter to go, last night, four of your prospects went on dates with these competitors and they really enjoyed the date. You know, they had a great demo and they really liked it and they seem to be responding on LinkedIn to that competitor, FYI. And then the second aspect is, now, what's the prep for your next call and what info should you send them? And that, if we can flip it from learn about your competitors and these battle cards to deal cards and help bring the competitive data to back to that deal strategy piece, then I think we're going to get people going, okay, that makes sense. That now you're speaking my language. So that's this year.
Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, really getting to the world of what we see in these AI models as you start to get to proactive recommendation engines. So as opposed to, like you said, I'm in a deal, let me find out what I should be doing. The engine is saying, hey, you know, you're working a deal. And we're going to tell you right now, for the deal you've been working, here's three things based on what we just learned that you should be doing.
We're pretty sure Adobe's in your deal. We're pretty sure, you know, they've got a relationship with your buyer this way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we ingest GonCall. Like, we do a whole bunch of integration with internal systems too. GonCall's CRM, content management systems like HighSpot and others. And we use that as part of our insight driver engine along with the win-loss interviews. And with that, we will put together kind of a roadmap on a deal basis is the vision. I want to be clear on that. That is where we want to take it. Today, yeah. It's still, you go to the competitor battle cards, competitor product profiles, and you figure it out. Tomorrow, it's literally, let me run my 30 deals today through this Clue filter. Tell me where the hair is, and then what do I do?
Absolutely. So that was one of the things I did want to ask you in terms of future. So that's super helpful. I'm going to ask you one more question, because as we've been talking, one of the things that sparked in my mind is just the connectivity between all of the things you're learning at a deal level versus product roadmap. So tell me about, hey, we've lost these three deals for these reasons. Maybe it is a feature issue. Maybe it is, you know, whatever. Tell me the connective tissue back in. So you're working with product marketing, but truly back into the product roadmap. What are you seeing there?
The majority of that's coming from our win-loss product and our win-loss interviews. Like, you get a lot of meat there. If you look at, I'll compare it to the CRM, you know, sellers are filling in the reason for loss and to who really poorly. You know, I love sellers, but that data is really bad. And we're basing a lot of decisions on that. It's pricing. Yeah. It's product feature X. And so we actually go through and try and validate that through the win-loss interviews, pick up what was in the CRM and just try and pull on that thread and understand whether or not it was, what is it about pricing? Was it the pricing model? Mm-hmm. Was it the inability to fit into their budget this year that you couldn't get flexible on your terms? Was it the competitor was significantly cheaper? Were you equal to the competitor? And the nuance on pricing alone is enormous. And on product, even more so. Was it missing that feature, or was that feature just not well demoed and understood? Mm-hmm. And often it's the latter, because we will present this information, and C-suite loves this because it's cold, hard customer truth. Imagine the recorded call with the buyer themselves going, like five talking heads in a row going, honestly, it just didn't feel like I was able to pull the reports that I needed out of your platform. Like, it just didn't seem like it was there. And if you're the head of product or the CEO and you know you can, you lose your mind and you are in this like, okay, we've got to figure out how to explain that better. We got to put a better demo together. We've got to put a better video. We've got to get a spec sheet. But it gives you a compass in order to do that. So that's how I see it leading back and actually challenging the data that's in the CRM. Our studies are well over 60% are off compared to what the truth is when we actually interview buyers. You know, nobody's doing it intentionally as like, but
of course not.
What's the value? What's the value? And actually we want to, then we go back to the rep and go, here's what we learned that might help you the next time you're in a deal just like this. Mm-hmm. And put a little reel together for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll just kind of close on this observation here because it is the reality of dealing with these AI models is that they are shining a bright light because they're, you know, they're data machines, right? They're just following the data and they shine a bright light and they're helping us separate, you know, the fact from the fiction. And the use case you just put on the table there, you know, you can talk to a salesperson. Why did you lose that deal? Oh, it's price. I'm telling you, man, we didn't give a big enough discount. That was it, right? And that's what I'm going to put in the CRM. And that's one of this. That's the story I'm sticking to, or whatever. And like you said, it's not nefarious. That's what they believe. That's their, you know, that's what they believe. But when you really click into it, like you're doing there, and you start to aggregate that data and say, hey, guess what? We're looking at the. It's not price. You know, we're not losing 80% of the deals was price. We're losing, you know, 80% of the deals because of dot, dot, dot. That, and that's actionable then. I mean, that it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer. So, you know, I'm watching the clock here. I really appreciate you coming in here to Tectonic because I think that it's just another example of how AI is, you know, again, changing all kind of workflows, but specifically for product marketing teams, for sales teams, you know, this is a new world. New workflows, just a completely new way to think about, you know, how you're being competitive. And if you're not leaning into these types of capabilities, you know, it's not going to take long. It's not going to take 5 years before, you know, you are going to be so handicapped in your ability to compete if you're not leveraging these types of platforms. So I think it's really important, again, that our audience just understands what's already there. And it's only going to get better and better and better. So I really appreciate you, you know, providing those insights, Jason. It was good for the audience. And I always like to end with a question of the day. You know, are you ready for the future of competitive analysis? Cheers, everybody.